Who are you? You ever really stop and think about who you are? You know, sometimes that can be a very sobering exercise. If we actually just turn off all the devices, I'm not much of a tech guy, but whether it's a cell phone or an iPad or an iPod or an whatever's next, or a TV or radio, whatever the clutter is that gets in the way, and get you a mirror out sometime and look yourself right in the face and deal with that question honestly. Who am I? You want a more sobering question? Who should I be? It's not the man that I am that bothers me. It's the man I am not and should be that keeps us striving, isn't it, brethren? Ask yourself the question, where am I going? Or word it this way, where would you be when you get where you're going? You're going somewhere right now. Every day of your life, you're doing something in various planes of existence. Whether it be our marriages, whether it be our jobs, whether it be the congregations where we serve, whether it be our personal development. But the best indicator of future action is past action. If you keep on doing what you've been doing, you're going to keep on getting what you've been getting. And if there's not much quality in what you've been getting, we've got to make some changes, brethren. Romans 15, verse 4 says, the things written aforetime, written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. I love the book of Daniel. I love when God pulls back the curtain from historical times and shows us the kind of people we should be. Or if it's a dissuasive example, the kind of people we should not be. You have folks like Ahab, you have folks like Jezebel. But you do have folks like Daniel. And I want to get this point across too. They are not special in any kind of literal way. When Daniel ate onions, his breath stinks just like yours, or stank just like yours. When he rolled out of bed, if he had hair on his hair was messed up. When he got dressed, you know, he had the same issues we do, one leg at a time, unless he could jump up and get them both on at the same time. But no matter how it goes, he was as human as you and I. So when you read these, this is not Superman. This is not Batman. This is not some comic book character hero made up. This is a man just like you and I. And he served the exact same God as you and I. And God expects you and I to strive to be like He was. Daniel chapter 6, you have the great decree of Darius, based, and it really comes about because of Daniel. Everything in Daniel 6 happens because of Daniel. Now you have a transition taking place. We got toward it there at the end of the chapter 5 a moment ago, the lesson we just heard. After that handwriting on the wall, that interpretation, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. It was done. That very night, the Medes and Persians came in. You get into the historicity of that. It wasn't much of a battle, really. But nonetheless, the transfer of power takes place. Darius, the uncle of Cyrus, this is not Darius the Great, this is a predecessor of him, but Darius takes over. He's the regent in power when they had the transition. He goes through those folks who are present. He restructures the government. He chooses three presidents to set over 120 princes. And the chiefest of presidents was Daniel. And there's a host of lessons we'll get to in just a moment. Here's a side one. It's not in the book. It's a free one. Daniel spent his whole life becoming qualified for the arrival of Darius. You ponder that for a second. Every event he went through, every trial he faced, every disappointment and every accomplishment put him, morally speaking and educationally speaking, and experientially treated. Anyway, he was ready. Darius shows up and all the pieces are in place, you see. So as he goes over these people, the one who stands out for him is Daniel. There's a man he can trust. Now, that caused a problem. When Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun, truer words have not been mentioned. Those other men who weren't chosen were jealous. And for many various reasons. One of which, don't forget who Daniel is. Daniel is not a blue blood Babylonian. He's not one who had been reigning in the household of Nebuchadnezzar. He's not someone of any kind of physical notoriety among their kingdom. He's a Jewish slave. And yet there he sits. as the boss. Now, get real honest with ourselves. You ever had an employer who knew less than you did? Kind of hard to keep a respectful attitude if your boss is an idiot, isn't it? Well, that's what happens here. In their eyes, this man's a slave. He didn't have their respect. They didn't like him. All they knew was they had been ruling. And now because of this political upheaval, they're out of power. To make it worse, not only are they subject to these Medes and Persians, they place this Jewish slave, a former slave, is now their boss. That being the case, they want to do their best to depose him, try to get him into some trouble. So as you continue through the passage, we find out that in verse 4, they sought occasion against him, but there's nothing to find. They said he's a perfect and upright man. He's not going to break the law. He will not betray the king. He's a man of honor. The only way we can trip him up, perhaps, is in his religion. If we can get some kind of a conflict started between Daniel's religion and this new king, we have us something. Because we know Daniel good enough to know he's not going to betray God. And they knew he had a habit of praying. So they go down to the new ruler. And they begin to flatter him. Do a study sometime on the idea of flattery in the Bible. What the Bible says about flattery is not very flattering when you go look it up. There's usually a reason folks begin to flatter you. But nonetheless, they go in there and say, "Oh, King Darius, you know, you're so great. You're so wonderful. We're so glad you're here. Everybody among us is in agreement. In honor of your new rule, why don't you pass a law that says we can't praise or raise oblations or pray to any god other than you? You be our deity for a month." And that was no skin off their nose. They're a bunch of pagans anyway. But they passed the law. And they got him to sign it. Well, when you do your studies on Medes and Persians, their laws, once they were signed, they cannot be changed. You recall that from the book of Esther. Recall that? Once the law is out there and it's signed, it cannot be repealed. So it is going to, and whoever, by the way, broke that law was supposed to be thrown into a lion's den. Now I want to focus on this next point. Once Daniel knew the law had been passed, he still went to his house. He went to the same place where he always prayed. The windows were open. He didn't shut them. He knelt down and prayed toward Jerusalem 3 times a day, as was his custom. He didn't change one thing because of this law. And I would even say, based on the wording of that text, he was adversarial in his approach. There's nothing in the Old Testament that says you have to pray with your windows open, is there? There's nothing that says you have to be facing Jerusalem to pray, is there? Reminds me of these 4 guys sitting around the coffee table one day, and they're discussing prayer postures and what prayer posture is the best one to pray in. And the one preacher said, "Well, you know, I find it most inspiring and thought clarifying if I'm on my knees praying to God." Another guy says, "Well, you know what? I think just laying flat out on the ground, face down, is the most inspired way to pray." Other man said, "No, I like to stand and with my arms outstretched, look up to heaven and ponder God and say my prayers that way." Finally, this man that worked for Southwestern Bell, one of these pole climbers on the other side of a coffee shop. See, guys, I hate to interrupt, but I'm going to tell you something right now. Best prayer I ever prayed, I prayed hanging 40 foot upside down on a telephone pole. Right? So the point is, your physical posture has very little bearing on the prayer being prayed. So he could have closed the doors. He could have, you know, prayed in his silence somewhere. You could be praying right now. You can pray anywhere you want to. He intentionally broke that law because it was an unjust law. He was not going to have his religion suppressed or changed to suit the pride of a man. He had a lot of courage, was one of our points we just closed with a moment ago. We're going to come back to that in just a minute. But we see that. He doesn't hide from them. He's not worried about getting in trouble. I wouldn't give 2 cents for a preacher who worries about what the result's going to be when he preaches the truth. I'd be a whole lot more worried about the consequences of not preaching the truth, brethren, on any subject and every subject in the book. But the arrest is made, and he's brought before the king. And they bring him in, and they're a bunch of sorry, sniveling people. Oh, king, didn't you pass the law that said anybody who prays to anyone except you going to be thrown to the lion's den? He did. I like what's said there as you read through that. He realizes that he made the mistake. That is the king. This is almost an identical event paralleled back to Daniel chapter 3 when you had the construction there of the great image and the great temptation there of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Recall that day? And the same thing. They would not pray to an idol that had been constructed. And when they told Nebuchadnezzar, hey, those three Jewish boys disobeyed you. Remember, he got mad, didn't he? But he got mad at them. He was an arrogant, foolish man. By the way, God's going to humble him later. But at that point, his arrogance and his anger was at them. When you come to Darius, you're going to see these Medes are a whole lot better men. Darius is mad at Darius. He's mad because he spoke so rashly that his unplanned moment caused another man great pain, a man he respected. So you see an interesting attitude there set forth by him. And he tries his best. He's trying to find a way. But I'm impressed with the fact that Daniel would not compromise. So many today sell their souls. And I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why. You know this life is short. You know, in the twinkling of an eye, I was talking to Brother Don a minute ago, and he's got 6 grandkids now. I can't believe that. I remember when he was barely having kids, almost. He knew me before I even got married. I mean, and it goes, about 6 months ago, it seems like. Now here it is 25 years later. It goes by quickly, doesn't it? Some of y'all get so old, you can't even remember what's going by, but it went by quick, right? You wake up, you can remember your teenage years as if they were just a few months ago. And it's been decades and decades and decades. Listen, a few months from now, we're going to be dead. The point is, why are we selling out? Daniel's an old man. When you really analyze this properly, I'm more impressed with Daniel here than I was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they were young men. Now, that's impressive. A lot of times, folks get old, they get feeble. They get feeble, they get scared. They get scared, they lose their courage. He does not. Do a sermon sometime on great old men and old women in the Bible. It's kind of like David. Y'all remember whenever David fought that giant? Remember? No, not that one. Not Goliath, okay? When he's an old man, he fights another giant. In fact, he gets whipped. He's about to die. Abishai has to drag him away and kill the giant for it. He ain't man enough to get the job done with his body. But I'm proud of him for still having a warrior's heart. Isn't that impressive? Old man didn't sell out. Daniel's old. He hadn't changed. He's still just as much of a hoss as an old man in his spirit as he ever was in his youth. So he's taken, and by the way, the king tries every way he can to get him out of trouble. Stays up, you know, he's studying, trying to reread the law, trying to find some way to spare his life. But those tattletales, that's all they were, they say, you know the law, king, you can't get around this. So they take him, and as they're going toward the den, and the king goes with him, he says, Daniel, you know, I know that you serve the God of heaven. Your God can and will protect you, and you're going to be okay. And he puts him in there. Goes back to his room and stays up all night, worried about Daniel. Come daylight, he runs down there first thing in the morning. He runs to the gate and to the door, and he even hollers out, Daniel, are you okay? Has your God delivered you? Then it says, oh, King Darius, I'm okay. God sent an angel who shut up the mouths of the lions. I am unhurt. Of course, you recall the rest of the story, how the king takes him out. Then he takes those enemies. Here's some good old Persian justice. He takes the enemies of Daniel, throws them in the lion's den, they and their families. And the lions overpower them, we're told, have mastery over them, break their bones in pieces and kill them as a consequence of them raising themselves up against God's prophet. What a powerful chapter. And you see that. And it's hard to not have your pulse quicken just a little bit to see that man of God who stood there in the face of all challengers and did not shrink from the battle. Now, I wanted to get through that quickly, which I did, to get to this part. I want to talk about the lessons. You know, I don't care if you can quote how many cubic feet were in the ark or not, but you better know the lessons of Noah and the ark if you're going to be a faithful child of God. And the same is true of all these lessons we're going through here. The historical material is of great consequence, but the real value is in seeing ourselves in that story. Where do we fit? Where should we fit? What can I learn in downtown Church, Texas in 2013 that makes me a better child of God, a better man, or a better woman, if I was one of you women, whichever it may be, to where I can see in this man traits that I should imitate? I don't mean some generic nonsense. I mean, hit us where we live. What do we need to change? As individuals, as church members, perhaps as congregations. Here's a handful of lessons. First of all, God never leaves us. I think folks forget that sometimes. It's amazing how many members... You can start talking to them about things, how are things going? Well, and then here they go. You ever had this experience? You go up to somebody, ask them how you're doing, and in about 10 minutes you wish you hadn't asked. I mean, come on, it can't be that bad. It sure can't be that bad all the time. I mean, some folks are so gloomy and so down, they brighten the room by leaving the room. Don't be that kind of person. That's not who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be a child of God. Brethren, listen to me. 1 John 10 and verse 10. Christ said, I came to give you the abundant life. Your neighbor should see you on a daily basis and desire what you have that makes you content and complete and happy and functionable as a human being on this earth. If all they ever see is negativity and down in the dumps and anxiety and worry and fretting and concern, we're missing something, brethren. If God is with us, should we fear? I've got a bunch of kids getting bigger now, but used to when they were small. It'd get dark. If you're walking outside with a kid and it's dark, if they're holding your hand, what happens? Well, if they're not holding your hand, they reach for your hand. If they're holding your hand, they squeeze a little bit tighter, don't they? Because there's a security factor in knowing that daddy's there. I don't know who the boogeyman is in their mind, but daddy can handle him, okay? That's kind of how they relax themselves in those moments. Listen, brethren. There's no boogeyman that our Father cannot handle. What do we fear? 1 John 4 and verse 4, he who is within us is greater than he who's in the world. Is that true or false? Then what are you scared for? God never left Daniel. He didn't leave him when his home city was destroyed. He didn't leave him when he wound up in the house of the eunuchs. He didn't leave him when he was challenged there in that first event of interpreting the king's dreams. He didn't leave him when Nebuchadnezzar went off into his animalistic fit because of his pride. He didn't leave him when he stood there in front of Belshazzar and interpreted the writing on the wall. And he is not going to leave him in the lion's den. He doesn't leave us when we get fired. He doesn't leave us when our spouse divorces us and leaves. He doesn't leave us when our children die in a car wreck. He doesn't leave us when the doctor comes in and says, yes, it is cancer. He doesn't leave us when the spouse we've been with for 40, 50, 60 years passes away. And he doesn't leave us when we're on our deathbed in the final days of our life. And brethren, I've got to know that, and you've got to know that, and that's got to be settled in our minds now, so that when those moments of weakness come, and they can shake us sometime, that we hold on to that. Daniel never faltered. I don't picture him going home and thinking, well, what am I going to do? Do I pray tonight or not? No, that decision is already made, wasn't it? I say this from time to time, but it's true. Brethren, we bow before God, and there the list ends. You made a vow. When God speaks to your conversion, he compares it to marriage. You're baptized for the remission of your sins. You're baptized into the Lord's church, 1 Corinthians 12, verse 13. You're put in the body of the saved, Acts 2:47. And we are duty-bound, and we vowed to walk with him for the remainder of our days, didn't we? 1 Corinthians 15:58. That's already been decided. Therefore, I don't care what laws get passed in this country. I don't care what the brethren think about me either, to be quite honest about it. Our only concern is, do I stand before God right? We'll have more to say about that on a different point in just a second. But Daniel's strength was bolstered because he knew God was with him. You'd already seen the same kind of thing happen with those friends of his. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I love Daniel 3 and verse 16. This also shows me the kind of attitude we're supposed to have. I get tired of this mamby-pamby, say nothing, sugar and spice, everything nice, never say the truth approach that some folks have. Daniel 5 a moment ago. When that reward was thrown out there by Belshazzar, Daniel says, let your gifts go to another. I don't care about your money. Get it out of my face. What you should have done is learn from the lesson of your daddy, which you didn't learn, by the way. So here's what's going to happen to you. How about Daniel 3, verse 16? Nebuchadnezzar, king of the world, drags these three boys up here, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Oh, did y'all not understand the law? If y'all don't bow, you're going to burn. I love what they say. Oh, King Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful in answering thee upon this matter. In other words, we don't care what you say. We're not real concerned about how we say this. We serve a God in heaven who is able to deliver us from that fiery furnace. But whether he does or whether he doesn't, we will not bow. Texas speak, we ain't going to do it. Brethren, sometime we need to bow up at this world we're living in, not bow down. Those boys wouldn't bow before that idol. They wouldn't bend in compromise, and therefore they would not burn when he cast them into the fiery furnace. That fire didn't hurt anybody, except the Chaldeans that threw them in there. Think about that. God wasn't going to leave Daniel. Those lions couldn't hurt Daniel. We get so scared sometimes. God's not going to leave us. Matthew 28, verse 20, Christ promised, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Do you believe that? Let me tell you a very important passage is the one in Hebrews about Abraham. When it says, behold, Abraham staggered not at the promises of God. But I wonder sometimes how much faith the average member of the church has. When you hear this little coward talk taking place, well, what's going to happen? I know what's going to happen. We're all going to stand before God one day and give an account. Nothing else matters. Isn't that true? If I die in a car wreck heading home tonight or in a nursing home at 105, nothing else matters, does it? It doesn't. And once that is settled, your life gets a whole lot easier to live, doesn't it? You have to cumber yourself with concerns and worries. You've probably heard the old adage, I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know who holds tomorrow. Isn't that true? Then why are you so worried about? I'm not sure what that stock market's going to do. You ain't going to care in 100 years. It won't matter anyway. That's exactly right. Brethren, we're going to be dead a whole lot longer. We're going to be alive. We need to have us some long-range goals in mind, don't we? And a long-range plan. And keep our priorities on that side of our existence. Matthew 6:34, Christ says, take no thought for tomorrow. Some versions say, don't be anxious, don't worry. You watch people worry. I had a guy the other day, he's not a member where I am, but he's a member of the church. Good guy. We're visiting, he's all worried. Oh, you know, this Obamacare, I don't know what's going to happen with this. And by the way, I am in the health and I'm in insurance business, but that's what I do. J.C. Rollo gave me that job. That's what I have to do all the time. I get 60, 80 calls a day, okay? And I'm going to tell you right now, nobody knows exactly how this is going to play out, okay? Just put that out of your mind. But back to my brother here, who's 78 years old. His wife is 77. He's all beside himself. Well, what if I can't go to my doctor? What if I can't? I said, listen, you are going to die. Just quit worrying about it. You're 78 stinking years old. You're lucky to be here now. But don't we do that? We get all worked up about things. Okay, either I will get to go to my specialist, go to my doctor, and I live 3 or 4 years and die, or I don't live 18 months and die. What's it matter? I'm going to go to glory. Good night, nurse. Don't sit there wringing your hands. What's going to happen? Brethren, we're better than that. The God we serve is bigger than that. The cause we are supposedly committed to is a whole lot more important than my personal physical health. Your great-granddaddy would have been lucky to get a shot of whiskey to take the edge off whatever he had. There was no medicine. And God expected them to do the same thing he does us. This crybaby poor me mentality is pitiful, brethren. It takes our strength away. It weakens the church. It softens the pulpit. I get so tired of these little old weenie talking. You don't talk. You, Angelion, proclaim the truth. Meek message, weak message. Don't you dare preach the truth like you don't know it's the truth. And don't you ever apologize for one syllable of it. This old man of God, this prophet, he wasn't going to be intimidated by a couple of furry cats. Does it matter how you die? By the way, don't forget this. He didn't have the luxury we have. We had the second half of the story. We know he lives. He didn't know he was going to live. He probably thought he was going to die. But that decision was already made, wasn't it? Do you ever quote the passage, Revelation 2 and verse 10? Be thou faithful unto death, and I'll give thee the crown of righteousness. So we see the lesson here that God is not going to leave us. God helps us. James 5 and verse 16. The fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. You believe that? Do you believe God answers prayer? Then if you don't, quit praying. You're wasting your time and his. If you do, then pray and forget about it. Isn't that true? Ask God for the help you need and get up and do what you can. That's all any of us can do, brethren. Another lesson. Sometimes a blessing can become a curse. The older I get, the more of this I see. You know, Daniel in chapter 2, this happened to him. You know, they're the wisest men in all the land. Daniel chapter 1. Wasn't that wonderful? That's good. The four wisest men, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. It's wonderful. Next chapter. All the wise guys get killed. What? Huh? Just graduated. So here they are, the smartest guys in the room, and all the wise men are going to get killed. You ever got a job promotion? You get a promotion. You get a bigger desk. Private office. More money. Oh, and by the way, more responsibility. Boss comes to you now. How come that's not being done? Well, I don't. Well, you're the boss. You better figure out why not. You're the manager, right? So with blessings, oftentimes come responsibility. Like having kids. You had that baby. Oh, yeah, get that all out of the way. Because soon enough, it starts stinking and growing and needs braces and wants a car, okay? So yeah, it's a gift, all right? But with that blessing also comes great responsibility. We have that right here with Daniel. He gets the blessing. But because of him being elevated to the prince, from a social standpoint, he'd been better off had Darius not even noticed him. Just go over somewhere in a small tent, live out the rest of his days, and die. But he was promoted to number one position. And with the number one position comes the biggest target. But he served God faithfully in that capacity. Another lesson, this is one you got to get in your mind too. There are some people who will just hate us. Chapter 6, verse 4 makes no sense to me. Daniel had never hurt these men at all, and yet they hated him. Can you figure out for the life of you why our culture hates the church like it does? Brethren, there is law after law after law passed that can have no effect except targeting the Lord's church and those who stand for biblical truth. Isn't that true? There are those who hate us. They say the word Christian, and it's like a cuss word to them. Bible thumpers. Bitter clingers. Negative, negative, negative comments, one after the other. But you explain to me why they hated Jesus. All he did was preach the greatest sermons ever preached. All he did was live the only perfect life ever lived. All he did was everything right all the time, every day. I tell you why they hated him. And by the way, it parallels exactly why they hate the church. Because of his authority principle. You know why they hate the church? It's not because we exist. It's because we teach the truth that only we should exist. Matthew 16, 13 and following. The one church principle. They hated Jesus Christ because he wouldn't bow to the knee to their social norms. He claimed to have all authority. We hold the word of God and say the same thing today. Here's the authority. He claimed to be the only way that led to heaven. John 14, verse 6. The church is still that same thing in our day. And therein is the hatred. But from a pragmatic standpoint, I still don't get it. Okay, do what the world says. 13, 14, don't do this. But if you do what the world says, 12, 13, 14 years old, you start having some kind of sexual contact with somebody that you're not married with. And you start doing whatever, you know, you may play with some kind of recreational drugs, and you do this, you do that. And somewhere in high school, you start having sex, then you have your first abortion, then you get married shortly out of high school, then you get your first divorce, then you go to college, and you have your second abortion, then you finally marry somebody that you love and have three kids, and they run off on you, and you get your fourth divorce. It just goes on and on, doesn't it? Hey, have you ever really been around the really sad ones? The 45, 50, 60-year-old burnout ones? They have kids by three or four different people. They've been married to three or four different people whose life is a shell and a wreck. Their kids are strung out on all kinds of problems. And that's normal in our day. What is so distasteful about God's way? Waiting until you're married. One man and one woman really bound to each other, committed to each other, Christians in their outreach and in their lifestyle, committed to their family, committed to their church, committed to truth, committed to what's right, paying your taxes, having a job, taking care of your family, asking for nothing from anyone, helping those who are in need, serving the church, dying faithful. No, that's offensive. All the other stuff's fine, but that's offensive. It's amazing. But Daniel did have enemies, and so will we. Matthew 10:22, Christ there says, "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake." Another lesson. Evil men will attempt to do you harm. Very similar point. Hate speech legislation. All that is trying to get us to shut up. Anybody who believes in the Bible, that law is directed specifically against. We'll let them fire away. Brethren, our sermon outlines are not dictated by nine men in black coats of the Potomac. Our sermon outlines have been placed right here in our hand by the judge of all the earth, before whom all of us will stand, and before whom every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess one of these days. Romans 14, verse 11. We have to get it through our head, brethren, and this is where maybe this goes back to a previous point. Congregations that keep trying to mold themselves into a more acceptable approach to the world around them have missed who they are, who God is, who Jesus was, and the nature of men. Wicked men will not receive the truth. Not a single amen. I don't care if you believe it or not, it's still true. Parable of the sower, Luke chapter 8, only one heart produces a faithful child of God. Our job is to preach the truth to all men of all stripes and all backgrounds and everything else you can throw into that category. But only the good and honest heart receive the truth. And sometimes we're going to have some opposition. Daniel broke the law of man. Another lesson. Daniel broke the law of men because of the law of God. I don't care what the states pass. Acts 5, Peter is very specific. We ought to obey God rather than men. Brethren, the Bible tells us over and over, evil men shall wax worse and worse. What do you expect in our day? If you're disappointed in the laws of our country, you have not been paying attention to our country. We don't have a political problem in this country, brethren. We have a moral drought in this country. Even the, quote, good people are messed up from the floor up. Aren't they a bunch of them? You cannot ignore the Bible truth. You cannot ignore God's way and ever get it right. That's Romans 10, 1 through 3. Don't care how good your intentions are. So Daniel had to deal with those and broke God's law, or broke man's law to serve God. We may have to die for the truth. You better die in the truth. If you're the kind of person who can't be swayed by outside forces, trust me, you will be swayed. Whether it be your family, whether it be your congregation, whether it be your society. I need to know what God's word teaches and hold to that. Buy the truth and sell it not. Proverbs 23 and verse 23. Rash decisions can hurt those whom we love. Darius popped off with his mouth. You ever done that? Tell a quick story. I'll quit. There's two or three more lessons in the book. Get it and read it. Several years ago, I had a buddy of mine. We were preaching school, I guess back 91 or so. He got out in 90, got married. I saw him and his new wife a year or so later. She had put on a lot of weight, okay? So I made an assumption. They walked up and I said, "Oh, when are you due?" And she wasn't. And I don't care how smooth you think you might be. You cannot extract yourself from that situation. I'll tell you something worse than that. I've been at Bangs 3 or 4 years. We had a girl there that was pregnant. I knew she was pregnant because I had a new theory. See, I never ask a woman if they're pregnant anymore. He'd be out to hear. I ain't saying nothing about it. That girl won't talk to me now. 25 years later, she still won't speak to me. Okay, that one I told you about a minute ago. So this girl was supposed to go to the hospital and have her baby delivered on Thursday. Well, Wednesday night. I saw her at church on Sunday. I looked at her and I said, "Well, I thought you were going to have that baby on Thursday." And she had. So now I just don't even talk to pregnant women or women with small children. The point is, we can make rash comments, we can make rash decisions, and they can sometimes hurt people greatly. Darius was impressed by Daniel. Darius liked Daniel. Darius picked him as the best man, but he ran off at the mouth. He made a rash decision, and a man got hurt. Galatians 5, you read about those fruit of the Spirit. 2 Peter 1, you read about the Christian virtues. There needs to be some meditation. We need to live our lives, brethren, with some intention. Be an intentional person. Don't just drift. Have a purpose. When you speak, have those words have some meaning. We could go 2 or 3 more hours on Daniel 6. What a great book. Proud to be a part of the Sixth Ship. Thank you all for what you do in this regard. But don't just sit here and smile and go, oh, that's nice. Get to the house, read this, then look at yourself. I bet out of those 9 lessons in the book, there's something in there all of us can benefit from. Thanks for your attention.